Say something. Why do you keep moving this?
I didn't like where it was.
Why didn't you like where it was?
In front of my face.
You don't like it in front of your face?
No.
I don't get it.
Welcome to the Approach Podcast with Adam. Adam is a celebrity chef turned health coach to the stars, an ex-gymnast and ultra-marathon runner. Here, he'll discuss intermittent fasting, sugars intake, sustainable weight loss, and so much more. No script needed and off the cuff. Adam's knowledge and passion for wellness and nutrition will blow you away. So sit back, relax, and prepare to get healthy.
What is going on, everybody? This is Adam Potash. You are listening to the Approach Podcast. I'm here with Victoria Bays. How are you, Victoria?
I'm good. Thanks, Adam. How are you?
Awesome. Happy Monday to you.
Thank you.
It's actually cold over here right now. It's about 52 degrees, 53, out of like nowhere.
Really?
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a surprise. I know that's not compared to some like you in London or people up north, but it's a little chilly for us. We have the most amazing guest. I know I'm being a little biased, but she is a friend and an amazing doctor, Juliette Ray. Dr. Juliette Ray, how are you?
Hi. Thanks, Adam.
I feel so weird calling you that, Dr. Juliette Ray.
That's me. Thanks for having me.
That's what everybody else calls me. So how are you? I know we have a lot to talk about today, and I'm very, very excited about this podcast because I am now going to be 45 years old, and we just went out to dinner the other day, and you kind of like scared me a little bit. And I think you should talk first. Tell us who you are, all your accolades, and let's start there.
Okay. Well, thanks again for having me. Like Adam said, my name is Juliette Ray. I'm a colorectal surgeon. So what that means is that I am a general surgeon who has done additional training specializing in the gut, so the intestines and all the things that go along with that, whether that's benign or malignant pathologies. But one of my passions is colorectal cancer. So that's something that Adam wanted me to talk about today. And since he is 45, which is the age that we recommend starting screening at, we can talk all about that. But also, since we're almost in February, March is actually Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. So hopefully your listeners will get a little head start on awareness.
Which I didn't know anything about that. So again, this is so eye-opening to me. And again, we went out to dinner. Juliette is a neighbor and good friend of ours. And we went out to dinner. She's like, how old are you? I'm like, I'll be 45. And she's like, well, yeah, it's time. And I had no idea. So why 45? Why? What's the deal behind that?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people think that screening, you may have heard of colonoscopies or the Cologuard test, and that this should start at age 50. But actually, a few years ago, this guideline was changed to reduce the age to 45. And one of the scary reasons that that has happened is because most, the highest, I guess, increase in colorectal cancers are now actually in the younger population. So just to kind of put that in perspective, there is 153,000 new cases of colorectal cancer that are expected to be diagnosed this year. And the majority of those are the majority of that increase is in the percentage of people who are less than age 50. So screening starting at age 50 wouldn't capture those people. So the idea is to reduce the screening age to try to catch these cancers earlier. Because one of the reasons that we do screening is because colorectal cancer caught early is very easily, we have very good treatment for it, including surgery. And that's one of the reasons I like this specialty, because unlike some of the other cancers, we can actually address it early and potentially even cure patients who are diagnosed at an early stage.
And that's the main reason why you got into this field instead of other fields out there.
Exactly.
So is this, and I'm going to sound very ignorant, like, is this health related? Is this genetics? Like what's the background behind this?
Yeah, that's a really good question and a really complicated question, because we actually don't really know the answer to that. So it's definitely multifactorial. The number one risk factor for colorectal cancer is actually your family history. So there is definitely a genetic component. But something that is also concerning is that there's an environmental component. And we know that things like diet, exercise, fiber intake, meat intake, all of these things contribute. And we actually also think that's one of the reasons responsible for why there's a higher proportion of cases in men compared to women, because of that disproportionality.
What's the relation between men and women? Just diet and lifestyle?
Yeah, so higher incidence in men. And we think that that has to do with things like meat consumption, diet, meat consumption, exercise. Yeah.
These big barley men eating too much meat.
Exactly. excess body weight, meat consumption, low fiber. We don't know exactly how each of these things play in or how much of, our colorectal cancer incidence can be attributed to each of those, but we know that that is part of the problem.
So then I guess that kind of leads to my next question I was going to ask is kind of like areas or, we talk about like healthy areas like, Greece and Costa Rica and all these like healthy populations. And I would assume that would have a big factor, non-factor, according to their diet and lifestyle and whatnot, right?
Yeah, definitely. There is, a regional disproportion and also among certain ethnicities. And we think part of that has to do with, again, environmental exposures, like you mentioned, but a big part also has to do with screening, which is why any colorectal surgeon or GI doctor you speak to is pushing for, screening, starting at age 45 or age 40 if you have a family history.
Now, and again, this sounds so much like, obviously doctors out there are not dissing doctors. They're like pushing all these things and tests, but this doesn't seem like that at all. This just seems like the facts are there. The numbers are, against us and we need to get screened earlier for this kind of stuff.
Yeah. And one other thing that's kind of interesting and unique about colorectal cancer is that most colorectal cancers progress from polyps. So polyps are, they start off as just growths of tissue. And over time, we think that time course can be, anywhere from on the scale of years, they can grow into cancers that invade through the bowel wall and then spread to the lymph nodes and through the blood. And that's how you can get metastatic disease or stage four disease. So the idea behind screening is not only to find a cancer, once it's already there, it's to find those polyps and remove them before they become cancer. And also help us identify which patients are those high-risk polyp makers so that we can screen them more frequently. So for example, if you get your colonoscopy and we find polyps, we might recommend you screen. I can't wait to do it, Adam. We might recommend you screen at every 5 years as opposed to every 10 years, because we're trying to catch those polyps before they become cancer.
Which isn't a big deal in the grand scheme of things, right? Every 5 years, what's the big deal? Like it's like getting a new passport, right? Like
exactly. So I think that's like the main issue is people are so scared to undergo colonoscopy. So, I kind of wanted to talk about that and what that process looks like.
That was my next question. Like, I don't know anything about it. Like I pretend to know like in conversation, but I totally don't. I just want to like sound cool if I'm talking to like other people talking about it. Right. But I have no idea.
Yeah. So, if you go see a GI or colorectal surgeon, they'll tell you all about this in much more detail. But in general, when you go to get a colonoscopy, the day before your procedure, you're just on a clear liquid diet. So that's not that bad. You can eat things like, clear juices, broths, Jell-O, popsicles, those kind of things. The goal is that we're trying to clean out the colon so that we can see very clearly and catch these millimeter-sized polyps before they become cancer. So then towards the afternoon, the day before your procedure is kind of where things start to, where shit hits the fan, literally, because you're going to start drinking the bowel prep and that's going to make you start pooping a lot. And that's going to be your bowel prep. So there's all different kinds of this. You can do a liquid
form. Is that like the pink liquid? It's like a pink liquid?
So it comes in different formulations, but the kind that we use now is usually like two little bottles. So there's all different options. But that is what makes you, go to the bathroom a lot, clear out the entire colon. And that's what makes the procedure safe and effective. And then the next day you go in, you have your procedure. It usually takes, only about 30 minutes or so. And you wake up after that. You just need someone to drive you home. And that's pretty much, it. It's a very low risk procedure and very
effective. So you do get put out. I didn't realize
that. Under sedation. Oh. So like a nice little nap.
Wow. And actually I'm lying because I have heard people that was like the best, 30 minutes of their life, right?
It'll feel like many hours.
Yeah.
So some people ask, can I just do the stool studies, those Cologuard tests? So I don't know if you've heard of those. I think there's a little bit of a misconception, why would I do a colonoscopy if I can do the Cologuard and not have to do any bowel prep and not go under anesthesia? But they are very different. So it's something important to understand. And there's definitely a role for both. But Cologuard detects blood in the stool and also DNA of the abnormal cells that we're talking about that create these growths of polyps and eventually cancers. But there is a high false positive and false negative rate. So that means that, it's not detecting these 100% of the time. So for example, 13% of people without cancer actually had a positive test when they did the studies on Cologuard, and 8% of people with cancer had a negative test. So that means that there, a lot of cancers were missed. Not to say that colonoscopy is perfect. I mean, we can miss them with colonoscopies too. But the other thing that's, you know, I guess different between the tests is that if your Cologuard is positive, you still have to get a colonoscopy because you wouldn't be removing those polyps or biopsying those cancers that it may be so detected.
Kind of kill two birds with one stone kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is so mind-blowing to me. Again, I guess I'm getting at that age where obviously it now hurts to like get in and out of my car. So I am at an age that these things are going to start, you know, arising, going to the doctor and things like that. But it is so interesting to me. And this is obviously so important because it's so catchable, right? Like in the beginning. So.
Exactly. So there's very few cancers that we can prevent just by screening. You know, breast is one of them. I feel like colorectal doesn't get the attention. It's not as like schnazzy.
You don't have a nice ribbon that you wear or anything.
Yeah, I don't have any like, you know, ribbon or like cool scrub cap in the OR, but yeah. You know, it's super important. And I mean, if you think about those numbers I gave you, like 150,000 new cases. You know, another interesting thing, 20% of cancers in 2019 were diagnosed in people under the age of 54. So 1 in 5 of people diagnosed with colorectal cancer were under the age of 54 that year. So that's pretty concerning.
Yeah.
So Juliet, obviously, you know, screening and catching early is the ideal, but are there symptoms that people should be looking for, you know, if they haven't been screened yet or they're not of screening age?
Yeah, absolutely. Such a good question. I get asked this all the time. So I guess the scary thing about colorectal cancer is the most common symptom is no symptom. Like most patients are shocked. They had absolutely no symptom. And if you do have a symptom, that's usually not a good sign. That means that things may be more advanced than we would hope. So the symptoms, definitely blood in the stool. That is never normal. You should always get that evaluated and, you know, don't just blame it on something. Oh, hemorrhoids or this or that. It has to be worked up. Change in the quality of your stool. So if you used to have normal bowel movements and now you're really constipated or you notice the stool is like pencil thin, things like that. And then, you know, weight loss obviously would be a later sign. You can have metastatic disease, for example, in your lung or liver presenting with changes in your labs or your breathing. So those things would be very advanced. But I would say the most common things someone might notice would be like weight loss, change in how your stool looks, or even blood in the stool.
Now, I have a question when it comes to intermittent fasting, and obviously I'm biased because this is what we do over here. We teach intermittent fasting because that's how I feel everybody should be consuming and not consuming through food throughout the entire day. What is your experience? What does this help? Does this not? Is it a better form of digesting throughout the day or anything like that? What's your experience in that?
Yeah. So, you know, I haven't heard any particular studies as to how intermittent fasting relates to colorectal cancer. I'm not sure about that, but I do know that it is related to the quality of what you're eating. So, you know, when we talk about fiber, for example, lots of fruits and vegetables and soluble fiber and insoluble fiber, you know, it's may not be related as much to the timing of when that's eaten, but it definitely affects how your digestion is. So another kind of thing that goes along with that is the microbiome. So the balance of good and bad bacteria and most colorectal pathologies, whether that's related to inflammatory bowel disease, cancer, diverticulitis, infections like C. difficile, we don't really know how all those things interplay. We only kind of know them in broad terms that you do need a broad diet with, you know, lots of fiber, less meat so that your digestion is more effective and efficient. You're not constipated. The stool is moving through quickly, those kind of things.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And we talk about it all the time, how like, you know, if you're going to do intermittent fasting, you're doing it for health purposes for the most part, if you're making that change. And so you're going to be want to eat healthier and have a choose a better diet for yourself. So yeah, it kind of goes hand in hand, I assume.
Yeah. And goes along with also like highly processed foods and things like that, which, you know, in some population-based studies have been shown, you know, we don't know a causality, but we know an association. So for example, people who ate a highly processed food diet as opposed to a diet low in meat and high in fruits and vegetables had a higher incidence of colorectal cancer. We can't say that caused their cancer, but we can just comment that that incidence was noted.
Kind of always going back to that Mediterranean diet, it sounds like the low meat, you know, lots of fruits and vegetables and all that stuff. This is all mind blowing to me. And obviously I gotta make an appointment soon, I assume. What is some kind of like, you know, last words of advice or, you know, obviously you want people to get their, schedule their appointments and, you know, stuff like that. But what would you say to someone not knowing anything? And obviously listening to this podcast for the first time?
Yeah, I would say just, you know, don't be scared. I think it's kind of like a stigmatized topic. Yeah, you know, people are embarrassed about to talk, you know, talk about their bowel movements or blood in the stool, and they may hide their symptoms because they're afraid to talk about it with, you know, their family or their doctor. Yeah. And, you know, this is something we see every day. So, you know, don't feel weird about bringing it up. And any change, like we said, you know, blood in the stool or change in how your stool looks, that is not normal. Don't blame it on something, you know, like a one-off. You definitely need to be evaluated. And, you know, age 45, definitely start thinking about screening, whether or not you do the Cologuard or colonoscopy. You know, that can be a personal choice and up to your other medical problems, but definitely a conversation that you should have with your doctor.
Awesome. Is it 45 for men and women?
Yeah. So 45 for men and women. But if you have a family history, like a first degree relative who has colorectal cancer, that's at age 40. And then, of course, people who have other high risk conditions like genetic conditions or inflammatory bowel disease, then those guidelines change.
Question. Obviously, we're getting put out, so to speak. Is there any other like health tests that we need to do before getting this procedure done?
So usually 45-year-olds are relatively healthy and they often don't need any other sort of medical clearance or cardiac clearance. You know, if you're on things like a blood thinner for a heart condition or something like that, then yes, those things would have to be discussed in the timing of holding those medications and such. But usually this is considered a low-risk procedure, an outpatient procedure under sedation rather than general anesthesia. So it's pretty stress-free for the patient.
Oh, it sounds so much fun. I can't wait.
It's going to be great. We're going to see you there.
Oh, it's going to be awesome. Take lots of pictures. Exactly. Well, again, this has been extremely eye-opening. Thank you so much. I know you're extremely busy, so thank you so much for taking the time out and doing this with us. And obviously, again, eye-opening to so many listeners out there that are at the age, or even maybe they're older and have waited and haven't even thought about it yet. So this is really good information.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you again so much for your time. Thank you, everyone. If you guys want more information about The Approach, obviously go to jointheapproach.com or jointheapproach.com/TikTok. Thank you guys so much.
If you like what you hear, please make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you're interested in health coaching, nutrition, and wellness tips, make sure to check out Adam and follow at Adam Potash Approach.